Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm sitting here with Robert O'Hearn. And both of us can't really believe it, but we're across from Rod Marsh, who is a hero of ours from our childhood and now our cricketing days, our great cricketing days. Welcome, Rod. It's amazing having you.
Thank you. You've aged yourself there, you know.
Rod's...
You never want to admit to having seen me play. That makes you very old.
Very, very old. But, you know, as Robert, see, I spoke of you in terms of that crossover period into the 80s, while Robert was full-time 70s kind of.
Full-time 70s,
yes.
Yeah, so there's a little tiny bit of leeway there. But, you know, for us, you were one of the most exciting players of our day. Like, and with you and Chappell and Lilly, you know, the golden... team, pretty much the heart of this wonderful team that used to play the West Indies and used to play England when theirs come out. It was our childhood, really. It was our 70s and our 80s. We used to copy you, try to do what you did. If we're sitting there playing, being a wicketkeeper, we'd be trying to do what you did as a wicketkeeper. And as a batsman, I just wanted to whack it, you know. So you've got this new book. So we're here to talk about the book. We're not here to fawn over you. We're here to talk about a new book. Your book is absolutely divine.
Yep. Look, it's I'm very proud of it. I'm really happy with the way it's been produced. I think the photographs are probably as good as I've seen in a cricket book, and there's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good story about how I actually found the photographs. They're up in the roof of the house, and I really didn't. When Martin from a firm said to me, "We need all your photographs," I said, "Well, I think I've got a lot, but I'm not sure where they are. I think they're up in the roof." And I went up into the roof, which is none too tidy, I might add, and I actually found them, and they were all in pretty good shape, which Martin was delighted about.
That's our legacy you're just putting up on your roof. What are you doing? That's Australian history that you've got to just...
Well, I was keeping them safe.
Because some of these photos, I mean, we were sort of discussing it earlier. The 70s, like, because Richard Glover's come out with a book where he sort of has a go at the 70s for not being what we think it is. But then you got the photos, which prove just how cool the 70s actually were.
Yeah.
I mean, there's photos of you guys standing around. They look like you're in some sort of crime squad show. Like, there's like the big collars, the hair, the mustache. Just looks so stupidly cool.
Yeah, well.
Did you live it? Did you
or
live
evil.
Because that period for Australia, and you see it in ads now, they hark back to it as a golden sort of age of cricket. Did you know you were kind of living through this period of golden age of cricket?
No. I mean, we just played. We played and had a lot of fun playing. And in the 70s, until World Series cricket came along, we weren't very well paid at all. But we loved what we did, and we had a heck of a lot of fun. We probably drank too much, but, you know, I mean, that was the way it was. But, you know, strangely enough, people say, "Oh, you blokes get on the grog," and all. We did, but we looked after ourselves too, to a degree. Like, for example, I would never, ever have any more than four beers before I had to keep.
I won't say
that.
In the morning?
No. The night before.
Okay.
But if we had to bat the next day, then... You know, if we'd bowled them out for 200 and we were none for 50 overnight, I figured that I probably wouldn't have to bat the next day.
Yeah.
So that night I might have more than four.
It's very understandable.
Yeah.
I mean, I think about, because you guys don't look like, it's not like there's a bunch of overweight and unhealthy men on the field. When we're watching, you guys are fit young guys. But when you look at the guys that are training now and how much they train now, do you think it's just over the top? Like, do you?
Well, they're athletes now, and I mean, that's fine, but I think they're still, you've got to enjoy what you do. And that's the one thing that concerns me a little bit, that they just don't, they don't get out enough, you know? I mean, it's tough on, it's a tough, tough life being a professional cricketer now. And I suppose the reasoning is people say, well, they get paid that much money, they shouldn't get it easy. But, you know, what people tend to forget, it is still a game.
Mm.
And, you know, if you win, it's fantastic. If you lose, well, it's not great, but You know, I always reckon that you learn more from a loss than you ever do from a win. So when it's not the world's worst thing to lose a game every now and then.
When you were playing, how many days of the year would be you tied up with cricket?
Well, it depended on what stage of my career. Towards the end, I used to say we'd get 6 weeks off a year where there was no training, playing or travel.
Mm-hmm.
And so 6 weeks a year was all we really got off.
And that was the week here, week there, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, now they play IPL in that 6 weeks, don't they? So
yeah.
That hasn't changed too much, except there's no T20 cricket when we played. And that, I think that's a blessing from my point of view.
Mm.
I mean, I really dead set have trouble remembering too many one-day games that I played.
Mm-hmm.
But I can remember all the test matches. And imagine if we played T20 cricket, how these guys can remember T20 games, one-day games and test matches they play.
Is it? It still seems to me, though, that if you're a cricketer in top level, that tests still means most to you and you want to be in the test side.
Well, I'm not sure about that with the young blokes
really?
Today. Yeah, if you ask a lot of young kids what would they rather do, would they rather play IPL or test matches, they'll come back with IPL.
Right.
And that really, or Big Bash.
And that is really, the money? Is that the money and fame?
Or
is
I think it's the fame. I think money helps, no doubt. But I think they see that as being more attractive because more people watch it.
Mm.
And I think that's very true. You go to the grounds in Australia when the Big Bash is on and there's, they're quite full, the grounds, some of them overflowing.
Yeah.
But very hard, apart from an Australia-England test match or a test match at Adelaide Oval, to actually fill the grounds.
And why do you think Adelaide, are there certain states, certain capitals that are more pro-cricket, more obsessed with actually seeing the game?
Adelaide is a cricket city.
Mm.
And, you know, I've often thought why, and it's probably because Bradman spent his last years there, his last playing years, and he lived in Adelaide, and I think people still come to Adelaide to see where Sir Donald Bradman lived.
Mm.
It's amazing, and there's a Bradman Museum in Adelaide, and it really is a cricket town. Out the back of the Oval, at Adelaide Oval, it's just the greatest fun time that young people have. They come down to the cricket, they never see a ball bowled. There's a big screen out the back. There's bar after bar, and they all meet each other, and a lot of public school kids that haven't seen their mates from those respective public schools since the last test match come down, and they all get completely whacked. But, you know, they have a great time. In the old days, a lot of the farmers would come down after harvest, and they hadn't seen each other since school days or the test match before, and they would do exactly the same thing. They were probably a lot quieter than the mob that get there now, but it's just a sensation out the back. It really is. And it's something that every cricket fan should do. They should get down to Adelaide for the test match.
Yeah. I just, when I was growing up, there was Lily Chapel Marsh, and there was Tomo. There was sort of these people would come and go, but there was this centre of the three of you guys just playing the whole way through. It just felt like you were always there for us. And then when that time came, you all quit at the same time. It was broke our hearts. But for me, that's what I built on, because I was lucky enough to be in that groove, that period where I was young enough to sort of just be obsessed with the game. Who were the kind of players that you took to your career? When you were a young man, boy, then into your teens, who were those players for you?
Well, I was a massive Wally Grout fan because he was a wicketkeeper. I used to love Ray Limble, and my father taught me to love Ray Limble because he reckoned that Ray Limble was hitting a bit, you know. He thought he was a fantastic bowler.
Hitting a bit.
Hitting a bit, yeah. And Keith Miller was legendary. I mean, he'd flown a jet fighter during the war, and... you know, it was just, it wouldn't have been a jet fighter, would it? It would have been a fighter plane.
Yeah
probably. Anyway, he was legendary in the Marsh household. And then, you know, people like Lindsay Hassett, who else? Colin McDonald used to open the van. Neil Harvey, of course, being a left-hander, I thought he was, and Neil's the last of the Invincibles at the moment, still alive. He's just turned 90 not long ago, Neil. So, you know, those guys, Arthur Morris, Brian Booth, they were all massive favourites of anyone who was, you know, I guess it was like you guys, anyone that was playing Test cricket was, you know, we loved.
Yeah. And in your
Richie,
time...
Richie, man, I forgot Richie. Yeah.
In your time...
Alan Davidson.
They had the big West Indies teams that came out. It was Joel Garner and Michael Holding, and there was a whole range of these big, larger-than-life characters that all of us just were obsessed with as well. Like, we'd always be, when's the next West Indies? It wasn't even England, we didn't care. It was, when's the next West Indies tour coming?
Yeah.
So we can watch them all play, and, you know, where they're going to get us. And they're so frightening, and their speed and their ability was just, my brain's gone. Who's the captain? It was just,
Clive Lloyd.
Clive Lloyd. Yes. Just brilliant. And, you know, with those kind of people, and they all seem to be larger than life characters. I don't know whether it was TV that did that to us.
I was going
to
say TV was a huge change.
Yeah.
In cricket, wasn't it?
Because you became people. They became full characters.
And when you tossed up in the backyard test matches, you didn't mind if you lost, because you'd be the West Indies.
Yeah, yeah, it was great. Because we would try to, like, I mean, I playing cricket in the years of Tomo was just terrifying, because all these kids attempting to be Tomo, they wouldn't have a clue where their ball was going to go, so you'd get one straight in your head. But, you know, people trying to pretend that they were Joel Garner coming down at you. You know, we were big kids, and we were always trying to lope down and get that whole action going in the same style. And you know, I remember actually bowling with a chain around my neck just so I could be Lily. Just to have it bounce, you know. But then, you know, these kind of things, are there cricketers now that are playing now that that you wish you could go up against? Are there?
I don't think there are the characters that there were for some reason, and whether it's the fact that they are these athletes, whether it's the fact that they don't spend as much time with the public as we probably used to. And, you know, I think the public gets onto these things, and kids particularly. I mean, I think there are kids out there still who are mimicking what Steve Smith does and mimicking what David Warner does.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're still around.
It'd be very strange watching all these kids do the Steve Smith getting ready to go.
Yeah, getting ready for all these mannerisms.
Yeah. Also, I mean, does Warren count as a character?
Well, I think he's the last big character, wasn't he?
Yes.
You know, but, yeah, it's a shame. And he would never, ever have allowed officialdom to completely control him, I'm sure.
Yeah. Because cricket is going through massive changes. And you've been involved with cricket these 50 years. And you've been heavily involved in cricket. The populism of one-day matches, which did change, and day-night matches, which did change cricket. And I mean, as a kid, being able to watch the whole game that quickly was a great thing. But, you know, as I get older, I'm much more towards test cricket than one days. But with the rise of 2020 cricket, do you see a period where there won't be test cricket? Like, can you, is that...
I think in a lot of countries there won't be test cricket unless they do something about it. I think, you know, the West Indies, I can't see them playing test cricket for the next 15, in 40 years' time, for example.
Yeah.
I can see Australia and England still playing. I shudder to think what's going to happen in India. I have no idea. But they've got to find a way of getting people to the ground. And I'm worried about it.
They've got a lot of people. They should be able to get it.
Oh, they've got a massive number of people who all love cricket.
I know, it's crazy.
Yeah, but, you know, they've only got so much disposable income, and I think that disposable income goes into watching T20 cricket live. Mm. And you can understand why, because there's dancing girls, there's noise, there's, you know, and it's all over,
yeah.
You know, like a footy match.
Yeah.
But, you know, cricket, there are still plenty of cricket lovers out there, and... as is evidenced by the crowds that we get in Australia and England, particularly when they're playing each other.
What's the deal with West Indies? I mean, we've got so much heritage there, that the amazing players that they're still around the game and they still do commentating. And like, is it just not getting the press over there? It's just not being taught at school? What's the deal?
Well, it's a very, very difficult setup. I think, the biggest problem is the West Indies isn't a country. It's a group of islands who are all countries, like Jamaica's a country, Trinidad and Tobago's a country, and they all come together only once. I mean, if you have a look in the Olympics, it's not the West Indies, it's Jamaica and Trinidad, Jamaica, Barbados. Anyway, they come together for cricket and cricket only, and they've had existing problems there, you know, in the governance of the whole, the board, and then, you know, West Indies the area isn't very rich at all, and it's far easier for kids to kick a soccer ball around than to play cricket. Cricket for kids is quite expensive. And they used to carve bats out of trees and they go and play on the beach. I don't think that prevails like it used to. And there's just a lot of things that mean that not many people want to go to the cricket in the West Indies, in that region,
When you when you did climb up into your attic and found that box of photos, well, there's anything in that, I mean, you know, we get older and we sort of forget about things. If you're flicking through those photos, were there things in there that you just completely forgotten about and looking at it going, oh, my God?
There's a few. I remember getting given photographs by press photographers.
Yep.
And there's one that there was a sequence of photographs of catch down leg side. And as soon as I saw it, I remembered the guy coming into the dressing room. This was probably 1982, I guess. I remember him coming into the dressing room. He said, "Rod, you may like to keep these." And there's this series of photographs. And I thought, oh, thanks very much, I said to him. And I threw him in a cricket bag and I thought, no, I'll take him back to the hotel because I may like to keep, you know.
Yeah.
Because in my cricket bag, they would have got beer spilled on them and all sorts of things. So I took it back to the hotel and I brought them home. I put them away somewhere and I found them not long ago. And I remember the guy. I remember who the bowler was and I remember the batsman. It was good.
Yeah. Good. And that's one of the things that stays in our memory is in those days with you and Lily, how you would throw yourself around like you were some sort of gymnast. How has that affected you going outside of sport and the rest of it? Because you used to just toss yourself in the air and land on the ground and it's like it was nothing, get up and do it again. Has sport been kind to you, or has it been more difficult after leaving sport with injuries?
I've got one knee left, and that's my left knee, actually. My right knee's been replaced, but that's fine. I mean, if that's all that's happened, you know, after 50 years involvement, well, it's not 50 years, it's playing, that's for sure, but, you know, 14 years playing the game at the top level, then that's fine. I'm very happy with that result, and I can still walk the golf course, which is more important.
And what is it like after leaving in the way you did with the two others, and you all went off, and it seemed like cricket, for all of us, was just got to be glum. After that, after you guys sort of went off, how do you cope with sort of turning that around? You were this wonderful star, and then you sort of say, "Bye, everyone, I'm out."
Yeah, no, I've never ever worried about things like that. No? Everything I do, once I finish it, I'm finished with it.
Yeah,
get on and do something else. I just, I'm not a great believer in staying in a job too long. 4 or 5 years, I reckon. That's about all you should. Although I stayed at the academy for 11 years, and it was too long. I admit that now after seeing, as a great friend of mine said, people are a little bit like pot plants. Every now and then they need repotting, which is so true. You know, I think it revitalises you if you can get into, as long as you enjoy it. That's the main thing. Whatever you do, you've got to enjoy it. And I certainly enjoyed every job I've ever had, really.
What was the high
Except
point?
As a school teacher, I think.
What was the high point of your cricket career? The one that you turn to, if someone says, you know, of all the memories, what's the one that you go to?
When I was playing or?
Yeah, when you were playing, when you were.
Look, I always say in answer to that, every test match that we won. I mean, we celebrated hard when we won a test match and, you know, because it meant so much. Mm. It meant so much. And if we lost a test match, we were filthy with ourselves for about half an hour, and then we'd have a beer and talk about it,
yeah,
and hopefully learn something from it and hopefully win next week, you know.
Mm.
That's the way we sort of played it. And, yeah, I think every winning test match, some spring to mind a bit more. I mean, the final test match in Sydney in season 74-5 against England, that was very special. When we got the Ashes back, it was very special. The following year against the West Indies, we won that series 5-1 against a pretty good West Indian side, not as good as they then became. The centenary test against England, celebrating a centenary of test match cricket at the MCG in March of 1977, that was special. And obviously my first baggy green, getting that was special. So.
Well, I tell you, this has been special for me. I don't know about you, Rob, but sitting across talking to Rob Marsh.
I've been special.
I mean, can you imagine as a kid just going, one day we'll be sitting here talking to Rob Marsh. Not going to happen. Thank you so much for coming in. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you. And the book is a delight. The stories in it, but also the photos that are in this thing, it just bring back so many memories. It's wonderful.
Very cool.
Yeah, very cool. Thank you, Rob.
No problems.
And you can get hold of Rod's book at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.